Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to make throughout this show live, you can write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E at AOL.com. Tonight I have a very special guest with us. I'm very thrilled to have her back on our show, Dr. Margalis Felstad. Dr. Felstad, thank you so much for joining our show tonight.
Well, Bonnie, I'm always glad to be on your show. I appreciate you having me.
No, we appreciate you being here because you've helped so many of our women. I was very, very honored to finally get to meet you this year in person live when you came to our healing weekend in California and touched the lives of the women who attended there so much, who told me they benefited so much from reading your books, listening to you. It really puts people on a different whole wavelength when you have someone who can really hone in on exactly what they're going through. And
it was a privilege for me to be there, yeah.
Thank you so much. I wanted to read you something that someone posted on our Facebook page from our support group, and it just kind of took me aback today because that was just recently posted, and I thought this is something that you can truly relate to. And it's a little meme. It goes, "A narcissist will turn independence into codependency, confidence into insecurity, extroversion into introversion, happiness into depression, hope into fear, and all without anyone noticing." And I thought, boy, that is so on target, isn't it? I'm going to send you that.
It is absolutely on target. And it's very demoralizing the longer you're in those relationships. It's very hard, no matter how strong you are, to push against that constantly.
And it came up in a conversation today with a friend of mine because we're in the process of developing our next book, Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Book 3, with some of the women who are part of the support network. And a friend of mine, when I was talking to her about some of the stories, she said to me, you know, you're such a strong woman. How is it that your ex-husband was able to bring you down to such a level? And I think unless you go through it or you have someone like that, it's really hard to explain it. You know, how if you can take somebody, and I was a very strong woman before I met my ex-husband, and within a couple of years, I was a totally different person. And unless you really experience this or go with someone, I think it's, that's why I love this little meme here, because I think this exactly says what happened in my life. And since you're really an expert on this, maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's absolutely true. As you know, I was at one time married to a narcissist, and I already had a PhD, was teaching in university, had a private practice, and I became kind of a muddling lunatic in the middle of that relationship. And it's part of what started me writing my first book, Stop Caretaking the Borderliner Narcissist, because I was trying to figure out, how did I get here? What happened? What crazy kinds of things turned my self-esteem and my sense of values all upside down and crooked? So it does happen, and it's very hard to maintain your sense of self and your own view of the world as a good place when you're in a relationship like this, because everything gets torn apart and repurposed for the needs of the narcissist.
Do you think these people are really clever that they can, you know, get the best at first? You know, people say to me, well, why would you even go with someone like that? And I try to explain this, put it on terms that people can understand, like domestic violence. I know that for many years I did not understand the whole concept of domestic violence. I would say to myself, someone's getting punched, somebody's getting kicked, why are they staying there? And then, you know, of course, when I learned about it and I spoke to many victims of domestic violence, I certainly understood a lot more of the dynamics. But as I explained to people, when you're going with someone who's beating you, when you first meet that person, it's not like they say, oh, this is our first date, I had a great time, and take their fist and punch you in the face. This is not how these people operate. They go and they love bomb you to death until you're totally devoted to them. And then it starts out as a slow process. And then it escalates. But would you say this is pretty much the standard make for the narcissist as well, that they know what
Absolutely.
They're doing?
Absolutely. Well, they know what they want, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They want your total agreement, your total attention. They want you to spend all of your energy and time on them. And they start out by giving you their total attention and, like you say, love bombing and telling you how wonderful you are and how fabulous and how you're better than anyone they've ever met before. And it's easy to fall for that. And, you know, I work with people who are CEOs for companies and they're being abused emotionally at home. It's a very tricky process because they get your trust and they get your agreement, and then they start switching things around by saying, oh, well, I thought you were better than my ex-wife or this other person, and if you really love me, you do this. And it's very hard to get your sense of what's real and what's crazy separated, because they keep telling you over and over and with such determination that they are right and you are wrong. And you love them and you want them to please them. And you get caught into that crazy process.
I would just like to get your opinion on this, and I know this may be a hurtful subject for people to hear, but I mean, I'm honest with myself. I know my shortcomings for sure. But do you think that the way you're raised, or that your sense of who you are, your self-esteem, is really plays a lot into this? Like, if you had strong self-esteem your whole life, would you be, you know, would somebody be able to tell that you're not the right kind of person for this type of treatment? Or do they look for people who have had problems throughout life or come from families that were not stable? Or that just doesn't matter, no matter how strong you were or how weak you were?
Well, what I've observed over 30-some years of seeing clients who have been tricked into these relationships, I'd have to agree with you. I would say at least 85% were raised in a home in which they were expected to please and to help the parents and to put their own needs aside. They also tend to be just naturally highly empathetic people that really care about other people's feelings, which isn't a bad thing unless you get with someone who wants to take advantage of that. A lot of people were raised in a family in which there was an emotionally dependent or narcissistic or even borderline parent. And so this relationship seems kind of familiar. It just seems kind of automatic, and they don't know this until they're really into it, that this isn't what they really thought they were getting into.
But I think that if they come from a home where there is dysfunction, which is always my biggest argument for getting a divorce for people, it's because children do model themselves after what they see, because that's their only source of understanding what is. And if they see you're willing to take abuse or be emotionally pummeled down, that when they get married or they have somebody in that situation, rather than running, they just say, well, that's the way life is. You know, that's what the expectation is. They don't realize that that's not how life should be because they grew up with it. Do you think that's true?
That's absolutely true. In fact, my newest book coming out in September is titled Raising Resilient Children with a Borderline or Narcissistic Parent. And we talk in that, but I wrote this book with my good friend and therapist, Jean McBride. And what we have noticed definitely is there is a whole system of how the family functions that is dysfunctional. Even if it looks good on the outside, even if everybody seems to be performing and nobody could possibly in the community tell that this family is not really set up for the needs of the children. It's set up for the needs of the parents. And when you get raised in that kind of environment with no outside influences, children really become emotionally stunted in their love relationships because what they've seen modeled doesn't work.
Can you talk a little more about your upcoming book? Because everybody keeps asking me, how can we help our children when you have a parent who's narcissistic, who's, you know, antisocial behavior, you know, where they're so afraid of how this is going to affect their children because they're living through it. And not everybody can walk away right away. You know, everybody leaves at different times. Sometimes kids grow up that whole 18 years in a household like that. So that's why I was so excited when I saw you did this new book on raising resilient children, because a lot of our children, I believe, suffer from depression. They're torn. They live in, you know, worlds that are not real because, you know, the wives are living that life. And, you know, even though you try your best to keep your stiff upper lip with your kids, when you're going through this, it's impossible. You know, you get depressed and you're sad and you're crying. And children see this and they sense it, no matter how much you say, well, I never do this in front of my children. Children are smart. They know when you're not, you know, feeling right. So they are worried about their children. So maybe give us a little more insight on what they can do.
Well, maybe first I should kind of elaborate a little bit on what happens for kids if there isn't a parent there who's strong enough to help them develop their own sense of self. We see children in these families often have a very poor self-image. They lack motivation. They try to be perfect, but they never feel good enough. They are very people-pleasing. They're trying to balance these two very different parents and the volatility that often is underlying, if not out in the open, in the relationships. And children can often be very, very badly treated by a narcissist or borderline parent, humiliated or insulted or demeaned, ignored even, and never feel like they can measure up. So the healthier parent needs to put a lot of energy and a lot of attention into their parenting. In fact, in our book, we talk about making your primary emotional connection with your children. And that doesn't mean to use your children as your emotional feedback system, but giving extra time and attention and listening and truly helping your children to see what is going on. But obviously that means that you have to build your own resilience. And basically, resilience is that ability to bounce back even under stress or adversity. And so building your own resilience so that you can model that for your children is really important. And we talk a lot about how to do that. Probably the first thing is to heal from whatever trauma you had growing up, as we were talking about before. If you had a poor parenting situation when you grew up, then getting therapy to heal that so that you aren't as vulnerable to the gaslighting and the blame and needs of the narcissist, so that you can kind of step back and say, okay, this person is being crazy today, so I'm not going to take it personally. And that's probably one of the biggest things, is realizing that this person is disabled emotionally and you can't take what they say as being true about you or your children.
That's really hard.
It's very hard.
It takes a lot of enormous
concentration.
That.
It does. And we really recommend having a support system. You're providing that for the women. I provide that for my clients. Having people who can remind you of what's real and who you are. Having people you can talk to on a regular basis. Learning to encourage yourself and be emotionally supportive of yourself. Of course, when we get married to someone, we really expect that other person to be a big support to us emotionally. But when you're married to a narcissist, they're not going to be your support. So coming to the awareness that that's what situation you're in and not expecting that person to act normal and not expecting them to give you anything, which means you have to get your emotional support elsewhere.
You think, I'm fond of what you think. This is what you know. Because I want women to be really clear. If you're married to someone who's a narcissist or who has antisocial personality traits, or, you know, even psychopathic, any kind of negative traits like that, it's not a matter of the more I love him, the better he's going to be. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And that's probably the biggest turning point for the people I talk with, is understanding that this is how the person's brain is wired. There is no way to change them. You cannot love them more. You can't please them more. It doesn't matter what you do. They aren't going to change. The only hope you have is not letting it affect your emotional well-being and keeping yourself strong and sane. And that takes all your energy. So trying to please this other person whose real job in life is to show you they are displeased so that they can make you do what they want you to do. It's really a coercion process. So being able to maintain your own emotional integrity is essential to your well-being and to your children's well-being. And I've often noticed with my clients that being strong for your children sometimes is easier to do than just being strong for yourself.
Yeah, I just find it really difficult when women are so beaten down. I guess, you know, it depends on the level of the person that you're
mm-hmm.
with. Because, you know, some are worse than others, for sure.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, none
and
of them are good, but some
in
of them
the
are.
Relationship. Yeah, the longer you're in the relationship, then typically the worse it gets. Lots of times I hear women saying, well, you know, I just will give them another chance. You know, if I just try this or try that, then maybe he'll change. But I've been doing this for over 30 years with clients, and they don't change. They don't have any motivation to change because they get everything they want. And the more you are accommodating and pleasing and giving up your own self-identity, then the more they get reinforced to keep doing what they want to do.
I just feel that these are, you know, inbred traits that people just don't get past. And I don't even know if they realize when you put it to them, you know, when you tell them what you see and what's going on, I don't think they see it that way, do they? Or do they?
No, very often they don't. One of the things that we start our book out with is the research that comes out of Sweden. Sweden has tracked 85,000 twins and given them personality tests over the years. And what they have done through their statistical analysis is realize that 75% of personality is innate. It's genetic. It's what you're born with. And so you have an adult person that is innately self-absorbed and not willing to look at their own self. They have little empathy. They don't really understand other people's emotions. And then they've been reinforced to get whatever they want for the last 30, 40 years. And to think that you're going to change anything out of that is ridiculous, really. It's just not even possible. And besides, narcissists don't want to change. They like what they're doing.
Exactly. And if you can't be the victim, then they'll find another one. It's not like they're going to change to please you. They'll find somebody else to please them. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And a lot of women I talk to are really hurt by the fact that when they leave the relationship, that the narcissist just goes on without them as if nothing happened, and they go find somebody else. And they're really hurt that the relationship didn't mean anything to the narcissist. And it's only after they leave that they realize it really didn't mean anything.
And I think what's so hurtful is that many of them go out again, especially the men in our network who are married. And this is not a reflection on the gay community. This is a reflection on gay married men who leave a wife and devastate her throughout the years of marriage and then go, instead of just being who they are, they have to go meet some other woman and devastate her life. And that even makes you feel worse, because here you were thinking that, you know, your husband's gay and this is why I can't have a relationship with you. But now he's, you know, telling people how wonderful and love he is with some other woman, and then you question yourself all over again. It's like you continue to gaslight you, or in my case, gaylight you, into thinking that,
yeah,
you know, you're crazy. It wasn't him, it was you. And that even takes the healing process so much longer.
It does. And I think it's information like you're presenting and that I've presented, and more authors are talking about this very problem, is that educating people to understand that this is a disorder. This isn't, you know, they like somebody better than you. It simply means they're abusing someone else.
Exactly. You know, that they're able to use somebody better than you. And
yeah,
it's really sad because a lot of times women get blamed. I know that with my ex-husband, he was continuing a relationship with a woman. And of course, it had to be a platonic one because he couldn't do a sexual one with her. But he made an excuse that he had had cancer and that's why he can't have sex. But at one point he said to her, well, I was bisexual for a while, but that's because Bonnie was not a good wife. I mean, and these guys tell this to their, you know, other women that, you know, they catch them. I mean, it's just amazing what kind of excuses they'll come up with rather than accept the, you know, responsibility of this is who I am. Which brings me to my next question, which I think is a really telling question. From all the research you've gone through and people you've worked with, nature versus nurture, or is nurture involved with this at all? It's just nature.
It's both. When you think about the fact that personality is in great part genetically passed on, it means that there is definitely a nature component. So you're born with certain abilities or disabilities emotionally. But if you've got a parent or a grandparent or someone very influential in your life who also has this disorder. So being someone who has narcissistic predisposition and then being raised by a narcissistic parent, you're going to get double jeopardy. And that's what we see over and over in families.
I often wonder maybe if it's because of the belief systems and the value systems of the parents. You know, I often think to myself, my father happened to be also the same antisocial kind of variety. I mean, maybe it was his upbringing, you know, I'm not pointing fingers, he just was. So I'm wondering if because I was so close to my father and I would think that, you know, I loved my father, and I loved him so much. And he would do wrong things and make light of it and laugh about it, that maybe, you know, I thought some of these things were funny when they really weren't, but I didn't know any different because this was his value system. Does that happen?
That's really, you know, definitely. And that's a big part of why we're writing this book, is that we want to emphasize to the parent who is healthy, is saying, you know, point this out to your children. Let them know that this isn't okay. Show them and talk with them about their own feelings and their own reactions to things so that they have a standard that is not necessarily the same as the narcissist, because children do learn. And when you have been taught that it's no big deal, then someone else can come along in your life and treat you badly and say, again, it's no big deal. What are you upset about? This is just how life is. So being able to teach your children about their own feelings, about the feelings of other people. One of the things we know is even if you don't have a lot of empathy naturally, if you work with children at very young ages, you can help them learn to be more empathetic and more aware and understanding of other people's feelings. But you have to help them see it. You have to show them, you have to discuss with them how other people feel and give them an opportunity to learn. But trying to do that with a 30-year-old spouse, you're not going to get anywhere. But with your kids, you have a lot of opportunity.
Do you feel that it's always better to leave a relationship like this when you have children or not?
I try and not tell people one way or the other because you mentioned before, every person's situation is different. But what I encourage all of the, especially the women that I work with, is to build up their support system, build up their finances. I mean, you can't leave if you have no money. You end up with your children often being taken away from you or spending long times with a narcissist who doesn't want to pay child support and you can't fight them in court. So there are a lot of reasons that people can't leave at the moment. And so in all my books, I've talked a lot about how to prepare yourself to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that may take a number of years. And the preparation is not just financial and job-wise, but also emotional. Are you ready to leave? Are you ready for this person to tell all your friends that you're crazy? And are you willing and able to tell people the truth about your life? Because that's the only way to fight that kind of sabotage that narcissists often do when they leave.
And that's so true, you know, because they put the blame on you. And usually
they're
the charming, nicest people in the world to everybody else who doesn't know them for real. So
absolutely.
I see so often
that's how they get away with it,
Exactly. Where women are alienated from their friends when they were married, how everybody feels that this poor guy's been victimized, that he's finally coming to terms and he's a hero. And the wife is just so more minimized. It's like a double hit. Because your feelings aren't acknowledged. And they always say, well, he's such a great guy. And I used to hear this about my ex-husband all the time.
Yeah, and often women haven't been willing to speak up and tell their friends and their family member what's really happening because they're embarrassed. They think it's their fault.
Mm-hmm.
And so I encourage women to have people that you tell what is really happening, what is really going on. And I think that's what's been wonderful about your group is that women can talk with each other and say, hey, this is how it
Absolutely.
Is. And you get validated and you understand that it's not you. And that gives you so much more courage and information about how to handle it.
I think in our case, it's really difficult because there's still a stigma attached to it. And that's not to say that other marriages don't have problems when you have a straight marriage. You know, there's a lot of issues to contend with. But we have all of those issues, plus, like I like to say, a whole lot more. And, in fact, in my upcoming newsletter coming out in a few weeks, you know, I talk about the shame game. Because a lot of this revolves around shame and this issue because you're already feeling that you've done something wrong. And then when you have a husband who's telling you, well, gay wasn't the issue, I wouldn't have been this gay if you had been more of a supportive wife, or I wouldn't have had to turn to men if you could have been more of a, you know, nurturing woman. You know, they're always throwing blame at you. And that just
Absolutely.
Puts you further into the shame closet, as far as I'm concerned. You know, they're coming out of their closet, and we're moving further back into ours. That's why I think recovery takes so
very
long.
Often that's true. And even with straight women, you know, their husbands are having affairs, which is exactly what you're talking about, too, and always blaming you. And I think it's important for women to stand up and acknowledge that this is the situation I'm in. But the dilemma with that, of course, is if you tell people, okay, I'm in this relationship and this is how it goes, people will say, well, why are you still there? And so it feels like a double whammy. So finding supportive people who understand your situation is really important.
And, of course, I tell all of my women the same thing you're saying. You have to have a plan. you know, you just can't walk away the next day. You got to be smart about it because you have a lot to lose. A lot of times women have invested 10, 20, 30 years of their life, and they don't want to end up with nothing, you know, but heartache and financial heartache.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you have to get all your ducks in order and get yourself, take 6 months or a year, go back to school, learn a career, you know, short-term career where you can at least support yourself, get some training, whether it's on a computer or anything else you want to do, but just so you can be independent, not have to worry when you have children, how am I going to survive? That's usually what happens.
Yeah.
Do you think with narcissists in regular marriages, do they usually just walk away, or do they maintain good relationships with their children? Or
most of them do maintain relationships, and a lot of them will have an affair, leave, that affair blows up, and then they want to come back.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Yes, and with their kids, they want to have 50-50 custody because they don't want to pay child support. They want to keep all the money. They feel like you've been the disloyal person, so you should have to pay. When it's really their behavior that was really making this all happen. So you have to be prepared for some really really nasty behavior oftentimes. And another reason that a lot of times people don't leave the relationship until the kids are old enough to not be fought over in court.
Yes, I've had women tell me, well, even though it's horrible, at least I'm here to protect my children. Because if we split up, the father still gets them, you know, every other weekend that they have to contend with him. I don't know. I guess I was too selfish to do that. I just couldn't live being so unhappy.
I think you have to assess that in yourself and in your children.
Mm-hmm.
Because some children are much more vulnerable and damaged by you staying in the relationship, and others are more damaged by leaving. And so you have to have a real sense of your own children. And in our book, we're talking a lot about how to listen to your children, how to understand what they're feeling and going through, and how to talk with them in realistic terms about the situation that they have with their parent. So often, parents have been told, well, you should have a united front, but there's no way to have an emotionally healthy united front with a narcissist.
That's always
way,
right?
Yes. And so
there's no
you
united front.
So you have to develop such a strong connection with your children that they can know that they can truly trust your judgment and your help. And that way you can protect your children even if you're staying. Now, the theory that you protect your children more by staying is really not necessarily true. Because, yes, he may have the children half the time, but his half the time is usually entertainment. Your half the time is parenting, and so you have a much stronger influence on your children, and you've got at least 50% of the time where they have no influence from him.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a lot of benefits, in fact, even for children, by leaving. But you have to assess your own situation.
Right. But ultimately, you can't tell people what to do and when to do it. But it's so much healthier when you're not living with toxicity, going and poisoning your body, which just translates into hardship for your children. For some reason, it seems from the children that I've worked with, the adult children, once they become adults, that they felt this uncanny sense of responsibility for their parents' unhappiness, that they blame themselves.
Absolutely.
You find that also?
Well, yes, and narcissists are very good at implying everyone else is responsible for their feelings. So that applies to their children, too. And we see children that have gone through these homes feeling always super responsible for everyone else. Either that or they're really angry and they reject any kind of responsibility at all sometimes. They often feel anxious, have a lot of depression, a lot of guilt that somehow they should have been able to help the parent. And especially if, in this case, if the mother feels guilty that she should be helping the father, then the children are going to learn that too. So the healthier parent really needs to model for children how to handle dealing with this kind of behavior and have intimate, personal, one-on-one talks with their children about how to think and feel in these difficult situations that they find themselves.
We give lots of examples
in our book.
One of the big pieces that I tell our women, I think I'm doing this, what I feel is the right thing, is that you can't use your children as your support group. You can't use them as your allies. And that's why we have a support group, because you can talk to other adults about this. But I tell them it's really dangerous to try to turn your kids against your spouse, no matter how bad he is.
Absolutely.
And I say that
because that's a very fine line.
Well, I feel two different things. First of all, with children, you're made out of two parents. And when you're sitting there knocking their father, a part of them is being knocked also. I think they internalize that part of them there's something wrong with, because you're so angry with the father and they're made up from their father also. Or when you get mad, you know, all mothers do it. You say you're just like your father. So once again, it's hurting their own self-esteem. But also I think it's very important that, you know, children personalize once again with parents when they see that you're bashing a parent. And, I it's very hard sometimes not to. I understand it. I really do. You know, I used to tell women I had to bite my tongue till it was so swollen out of my mouth it was falling out, because I really wanted to say the truth, but the truth would have really hurt my children more than not saying it. So how much truth is good to tell?
Well, we suggest that parents stick to the facts, okay? Saying things like, your dad's having a really bad day today, and I see he was angry at you for doing such and such. How do you feel? What would you like? How can I support you? How can I help you? So that your focus is on the needs of the child, and you simply are stating the facts that are visible to the child about what's going on. You don't label, you don't use put downs or insults. You simply say, this is what happened, how can I help you? So that you're conveying to your child, you are the most important thing here, and I'm going to do everything I can to help you deal with this, including oftentimes giving children ideas about how to respond, or even, you know, helping them to sort out how they think about things. You know, if a narcissist is saying to the child that they're stupid, you can talk to the child and say, well, what does your teacher think? What are your grades? How do you feel? So that you give them a reality check without putting down the parent, but showing the child what's real versus someone is having a temper tantrum. And most children truly understand that parents have temper tantrums because kids have them. And kids understand when they're having a bad day. And there's a number of good books for kids out about that. And so if you convey to the child that the parent is having a bad day, or things are not going well, or they're just not doing well today. So how can I help you? What can we do to change this, you and the child?
I don't know if you're going
to
find
it. To get the parent to change, because a lot of relationships, the healthier parent is trying to get that narcissistic parent to change their behavior. What we focus on is helping your child reframe what's going on so that they understand it in more real terms.
This is very important. But I do want to tell you that there have been a number of young adults that I've spoken to, you know, in their 20s, who have written some articles for me, who have said very forcefully, I wish my mother would have left. I don't know why she stayed and why we had to go through all of that. You know, that they're very disappointed. You know, no matter how much you say, well, she was trying her best, she didn't want to break up a family. Well, you know, it was very hard on us having to go through this every day with, you know, fighting and the yelling and the screaming. So, you know, they don't feel very comforted, you know, when people stay together that really.
No, they don't. I remember, I think I was in my early 30s. My mother was borderline, as you know, and I asked my father, why didn't you leave? I prayed for it every day. And he said, well, you know, my parents were married in the 1940s. And he said, you know, the way the courts are and the way your mother and her family are, I would have never been able to see you again. They would have taken you away, and that would have been the end. And I felt I needed to stay and protect you. And that changed a lot for me. And so I encourage people to ask the parent, why didn't you leave? Because usually don't leave because there was a good reason. And at least when you're in your 20s and 30s, you start to be able to see your parents as fallible human beings. And if you can get an honest answer from the parent, that often helps you to understand the situation. Because as children, we're only thinking of it from our own perspective. I want out of here, so get me out of here. But there's a whole big picture, as you know, about what people, what it will cost everyone for leaving or for staying.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about your books, you know, so that for the women who haven't read them yet. Your first one on this particular subject, Stop Caretaking the Borderliner Narcissist, How to End the Drama and Get On with Life. And this was a life-changing book for several of my members. That's how I met you, actually, through one of them who said this book. Nothing else could put their finger on what was wrong until she read your book. And her whole life changed after she read it. And after I read it, I could see why it changed, because it's just so powerful and it just hits every issue. And this is in the beginning when you talk about people who have borderline or narcissistic personality disorders and how it's going to affect their relationships. So can you talk a little bit about the first book first?
Well, in the first book, a lot of the first part of that book is really helping people understand how narcissists and borderlines think and how their emotional system is so very different from normal. And I give lots of examples. And then talk about the whole process of growing up and becoming a caretaker. Because people who are highly empathetic and who are really easygoing and flexible and have been in the presence of an emotionally damaged parent often are real targets for borderline and narcissistic people. And they kind of test you to see how much you'll put up with. And if you put up with it, then they zero in on you and form a relationship. And a lot of times people who are caretakers end up, even though they're very nice people in so many ways, they end up putting up with so much negativity And it's very devastating. So in the latter part of the book, I talk about how to be more assertive, how to look for the red flags that are going on in the relationship, and how to build a support system and figure out what you really want to do with your own life instead of always focusing on that narcissist or borderline person. In therapy, I find clients who cannot tell me what their own feeling is. They keep telling me what the narcissist feels, what the borderline feels.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to learn to tune into themselves. And in the second book, Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship, there's over 30 exercises in that book to help people to tune back into themselves and to understand and get in touch with their own values, their own perspective, to reframe what has happened, and to let go of the picture of life that the narcissist has brainwashed them into feeling.
I would say that it's a process that you have to go through. I don't think it happens overnight. I think that it takes a while.
It can be a long process. It does.
I mean, on both ends, even, you know, starting to be beaten down takes a little time. Building up takes forever. But because they know how to push all the buttons, and I find it very true with the women that I, you know, myself, starting with me, you know, they look for your weaknesses. They get to know you that well. And then when they want to manipulate you, they use those weaknesses against you. You know, they learn what everything is you fear and everything about yourself that you don't like. And then they turn it around. Like, they do it like they're really caring about you. What's bothering you? Tell me, tell me. And then they take that information, they store it away until they're ready to attack you. And I think that's what just beats you down so much, is that they're attacking your weakest point. Whether it be with a parent when you were growing up, well, your parents always said you were no good, and they always said this, or, you know, whatever you've told them, they turn it around on you. And I think that they're excellent at manipulating people. Can you just explain a little bit the difference between a narcissist and somebody with antisocial behavior?
Well, a narcissist is kind of a lighter version. It's really a continuum. Some people are self-absorbed. Other people are more manipulative, and other people on the more extreme version really don't care about your feelings even a little. Most people that we would identify as narcissistic care about your feelings as far as it affects them.
Uh-huh.
Or as a sociopath or an antisocial person, doesn't care about your feelings at all. They can be really clever at pretending, but they really don't care. And that's very hard to tell the difference when you're in a relationship with a person like that.
I think, as I tell my women, it really doesn't matter what you call it. It's like, they, you know, if a man tells me, well, he's not really gay, he's asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, metrosexual, we'll go through a whole list. So I gave up trying to define anything. I say either you're straight or you're unstraight. And the same thing here, I think, you know, take your choice, like the uncola, the unstraight. And the same thing here, it doesn't matter how we define it. It's just destructive, no matter what it is, whether it's just narcissism or combined with sociopathic behavior or psychopathic. None of it is good, right?
That's correct. In fact, somebody emailed me this week saying, can you tell me the difference between these five different kinds of narcissists? And I emailed back and said, they're all narcissists. They just may present in different ways, but it's all the same thing. It all has to do with their needs being met first. And then if they can get your needs met so you stay with them, then well and good. So you're right. It's, you know, either that person truly cares about and thinks about your feelings and your needs, or they don't. And you have to figure out from what they say and do. And mostly you have to figure out from what they do and how it feels, not what they say, because narcissists
exactly.
are especially good at telling you that they love you and you're the most wonderful person they've ever been with. However,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know,
I love you with all of your faults. Yeah, exactly. And they'll find all of your faults.
Yeah.
But because,
yes,
you know, they have you convinced. I'll tell you a common saying that a lot of our women go through, and maybe the ones that you work through too. You'll never find anyone who loves you as much as I do.
Oh, yeah. That's really
common. Very common. And, you know, by the time I heard that saying for about 100 times, you know, every month, I started thinking, well, I hope not. I hope nobody loves me like this again. And,
exactly.
You know, but they need to use these words and how to make you feel that it's you where there's something wrong, not them. You know, I'm a loving, caring person. I can't help it. If you have things you need to fix about yourself, I'm not the problem. And I find that often these guys don't want to go into group family counseling. Am I right on saying that? We'll do this. Give it one
absolutely.
Or two times, but that once you tell them on anything, right?
Yeah. The minute a therapist calls them on anything that they're doing, they're out of the therapy session. In fact, it's rare for a narcissist to last through three therapy sessions. They find something wrong with the therapist. They say they're stupid. They don't say they don't know what they're doing. They'll say, well, I'll find a good therapist. And a year later, they haven't looked at all because they don't want to change anything they're doing. And that's at the heart of it. Women so often try and convince the man to make a change because if you love me, you'll change. And the narcissist is thinking, well, do what you demand of me just long enough to get you over the hump and then I'll go back to being exactly what I want to be. Because that is what they want to be.
Right. They're happy with what they are and they're not looking to change it. They're just looking to change you. And that's why I have my mantra on my website, and it says, you know, you cannot fix a broken man, but he can break you. And that's my theory.
Wow.
I have it in big letters, right, when you go to gayhusbands.com. You cannot fix a broken man, but he can break you. Because it's the truth. You can fix them.
It is the truth.
It's exhausting.
Right.
You'll keep trying, but it's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But he will break while he's doing it.
Yeah.
So I hate to,
and the atmosphere
you know,
and the energy around people like that is it's self-exhausting.
Very.
And a lot of people, it's a hard thing to quantify, but oftentimes when that person walks in the door, suddenly your whole emotional system changes and you can feel it in your body. And that's probably the most strong sign that you need to get out of there. Because that's
I can't believe our hour is already over. I can't believe we're already done, but I do want to say this. Your new book won't be available until October, is that correct?
Yes, the end of September, and it'll be out on Amazon.
Yes, I pre-ordered it already. But
cool.
I was so excited. I said, I want to get in on this early. Raising Resilient Children with a Borderline or Narcissist Parent. I'll be advertising it in my upcoming newsletter so people can get ready to buy it. And I appreciate so much that you're on our show, that you help give support to our women. You also have a free newsletter, and if you're listening to this show, you'll see it on – you see it listed there, how to get the newsletter. And Dr. Felstad does talk to people, so if you have questions, you know, you can get in touch with her through that link. So thank you
absolutely.
So much again, Dr. Felstad. I can't wait till you'll come back. We'll talk, you know, when you launch your new book. So I'll be able to.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. I always enjoy talking with you.
Thank you so much. And to all of our women, hang tough. Tough times when you're stuck where you don't necessarily want to be, right? With the
absolutely.
Coronavirus. Yeah, but just hang in there. Better days are ahead. All right, take care. Love to all of you.
You too.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.